Welcome to Strictly Business, Variety's weekly podcast featuring conversations with industry leaders about the business of media and entertainment. I'm Cynthia Littleton, co-editor-in-chief of Variety. Today, my guest is Chef Jeffrey Zakarian. Zakarian landed in the sweet spot where culinary and TV fame meet about a decade ago when he became a judge on Chopped, and he won the coveted Iron Chef title. For the past 4 years, Zakarian has steadily been expanding his activity as a content producer. He founded Corner Table Entertainment with partner Jared Keller in 2017. That put him in a good position to produce content for Food Network parent Discovery and the fledgling Discovery Plus streamer, which has a voracious appetite for shows. Zakarian in our interview discusses the differences between launching a restaurant and launching a TV show. In his mind, there's no question about which task is harder. He also reveals that the company has cameras on the ground working on a documentary with Tribeca about the pandemic's devastation of New York's restaurant scene. We're capturing it as it actually happens, he says. And that's all coming up today on Strictly Business. Welcome back to Strictly Business. Here's Jeffrey Zakarian.
Chef, entrepreneur, and head of Corner Table Entertainment, a bustling production company that is right there in the nexus of food and content. Jeffrey, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much, Cynthia. It's lovely to talk to you. We've talked before, and it's always a pleasure. I love how you have your finger, the true finger on the pulse of what's happening in the world of media. Because it's an all-important world that, you know, no one seems to be able to live without, especially today.
It is just like the food world. It is an incredibly dynamic business where you never know where the next hit, the next great idea is coming around the corner. I've always been a fan of your appearances on Food Network. I always really get the sense that you are speaking as a culinary, as a decorated chef, but also as a businessman. And it's in that context that we want to talk about your evolution as a TV personality and as now, for the last couple of years, been increasingly active as a producer behind the scenes with Corner Table Entertainment. And I would love to start by just asking you what you obviously have become one of the most recognizable faces on Food Network, and I can only imagine that has been good for your business overall, but what was it that made you in 2017? What was it that made you decide to plant your flag and launch Corner Table Entertainment and start your own production entity?
Well, that's it doesn't work seamlessly like that. It sort of like comes in bits and pieces. So I can only answer you in telling you that as a TV chef and as someone who's been on a lot of shows, Chopped since 2010 or whenever we started, I can't remember. And then we've had so much success with those shows. What happens is, Cynthia, is you start to get in everyone else's head and you start giving your opinions on what will work and what won't work, correct? Mm-hmm. So as you're asked by the producers, what did you like about this? What did you like about that? That aired well, this aired well, this didn't do so well. I think we should do more of that. And what happens is you have this sort of conversation with the people around you and the producers and the executive producer and the EP, because you're talent and you're not back at the scenes, you're right up there. And they want to know how it felt and they see the results from the ratings, right?
Right.
And so what happens is you're actually then producing or co-producing. You're like, okay, we're going to have this idea. What do you think? You run it by, you test it, you do it. So it's as simple as that, honestly. It's just things work. You're asked for more direction. You're asked for more, you know, more what you think works. Like, tell me why you would like to do this. This worked better. That was great. It was a great idea. Let's do it again in a different way. So it really is a creative process based upon doing a couple of things right and getting good feedback, right? That's the base of everything. And like you said, TV is the Food Network and everything else, but especially food is all about content. If you don't have content, a story, a beginning, a lead, a competition show, a stand and stir, some sort of holiday theme. There's all kinds of things, but you know, the kitchen is evergreen in the extent that it's every year and it follows a season. And some shows like Chopped are really evergreen. We could, you know, you could send you know, other than throwing a Christmas show on in July, you can show this chop any time of the year. So for us, it's just a very, you know, Jared and I launched it in 2017. It's a natural sort of ideation about all this creative stuff we've been talking about with our executive producers and Food Network. Like, we talked with David Zasloff, Kathleen Finch, and Courtney White. They run it. And, you know, they need all this content for Discovery Plus, and they need all this content for Food Network. So it's just, we've been around so long, and we've been doing this. We know what works, what doesn't work. So they asked us to help with content, and we decided to just, like, put it out there. And we actually had a great run with the telethons that we did in the pandemic. It was just the timing, and we, like, you know, we just did it. And we produced it like everyone else did. And it was sort of like a nice test, a way to test the our production capabilities and what worked and what didn't work. We found out some partners, how to edit and all that stuff. So lo and behold, we raised $2.5 million with one national and one local. And, you know, now we have this production company. So it's not like we sat down and said, what's the 5-year goal? It was not that at all. It was like, we have these ideas. Let's start, like, writing them down on paper and pitching them, because they need content. So it all comes down to that. But I love that part of it, because that's still creating, you know? So
you like the idea stage. You like being at the germ of the idea of what you're going to execute.
It's so wonderful. And anyone else that does this for a living, what I do in a different profession, will tell you the same thing. It's like creating music, and it's writing a script. And it's so fun to sort of collaborate and then see it happen, and then either fix it or do more of it. So that's sort of what we're really loving. And what's great about it, Cynthia, is that allows me to continue to cook, continue to do the shows, but have a behind the scenes sort of inventory of stuff that, like, oh boy, this would work right here. This would be a great way to, like, take one of these shows that we have in our brain and let's do a segment on the kitchen. Let's do a 7-minute segment. Let's pitch it and let's try it and see what happens. You know, we don't have to spend any money. We're all there. Let's just do it.
You have your own incubation lab right there.
So that's what, like, we're doing a lot of. And, you know, we just shot a sizzle. We're doing a restaurant documentary with Tribeca Productions. We're very excited about that. And it's all because of just this natural sort of consultation with the producers and the people there. Because ultimately, your boss now is now your collaborator, because they need content. You need content to stay on the air. You love to do content. You're a professional that's been doing cooking for 40 years. You've seen just about everything, and you've been working on a show that's very current. So how do we put that into a beaker, shake it, and come up with a great new cocktail? So that's really what we do and what we're doing. So we're very excited about it. And, you know, we're just at the beginning. You know, we haven't even started. I mean, Bobby Flay's been producing his shows for, I think, 15 years or 12 years at least.
Mm-hmm. What was it? Was it the kind of thing, did you have to get it? Did it sort of start very small, or did you line up, as you said, you did not have a 5-year plan, but was it the kind of thing you had to line up some backing or some financing? Did Food Network? No,
and we just partnered with BSTV, one of our partners in the kitchen. And they sort of helped us along, and they showed us the rope, and we just went, you know, we did these ideation meetings, and we just came up with some great shows, and we do sizzle reels. And it's a very simple process, because it was we're already doing it. So basically we didn't have to really raise all this capital. Like, let's just start real small. So basically Jarrett, Tara, myself, and my wife, Margaret, and the four of us, we just did it. We, you know, just huddled, got it together, wrote it up. Met with someone who has all the capability of doing that, just like we did the telethon. You have to find someone that is actually in the editing booth and has all, you know, people on the ground and people doing the documentaries, you know, boots on the ground. And so that's how we started. At one point in time, we're going to probably have boots on the ground also. Probably a big fancy office if they ever open.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, you know, we're just going along with what really is important, which is this content, you know, the idea and how to get that idea to the film. Because we all have, you know, expertises, and the people that in the editing booth not necessarily understand what we're talking about. And what we're talking about, we don't necessarily understand when production telling us about, like, the budget. and how we work it over 4 days and how, you know, breaks and how we have to do it and how we have to shoot it in this day because of this and not going in overtime. So it's right. All that sort of like nice shared value and shared common cause that we don't have to be an expert in everything, but we're really good at content and really good with ideation. So that's why we're very excited about it.
Do you, how would you compare the process of, you know, assembling that team, executing on, you know, just settling on ideas, you know, setting the goal, executing to those goals? How would you compare launching a show or a telethon, like the telethon that you've done, to launching a new restaurant or setting up a new business that was in the core cooking world?
Well, in a restaurant, you know, it's far more difficult to get the ball across the line. For the very reason is you have one goal. You come up with a piece of paper, a plan. You've sold it to someone that has investment. It's going to put $3 million, say, in a restaurant. That's all you're doing. It's that one thing. And if it doesn't work, you're screwed. Mm. So if they don't like one show, we have another one. They have another one. Yeah. You might like do three or four pilots and none of them get picked up. But it's a very fluid sort of role. So I would say the pain is far greater in the physical, you know, brick and mortar world of opening a restaurant. And I mean that because you're literally on your feet 100 hours a week. The first 3 months are like having a wisdom tooth pulled every 45 minutes.
Ooh.
It's crazy, nutty, and volatile, and, you know, rife with problems and legal stuff and lawsuits and all the stuff that comes at you because people are just like, you know, crazy in this world of restaurants. But that's why they're so exciting. But what they do provide is they provide a vivid sort of petri dish of possible content that you can't imagine is going to be there until you actually see it happen. So this, you've created this, I don't know, vacuum where stuff happens. Now you're managing it. Now it's a full-time job. Now you're waiting for the critics to come in. Now you hope it works. Now you hope it makes money. Now you have to try to pay your investors back. So there's so much content that you get out of that. Plus you get a marquee that you wouldn't necessarily have if you weren't in brick and mortar. It doesn't mean that you can't be in the restaurant business and you can't be in the production business and not be in the restaurant business. But if you're in the restaurant business, the movement to the producing business is a far more fluid and creative and fun experience because there's very little downside other than getting rejected all the time, which is normal, you know?
Right.
You're just going to get like a no, that's a yes. And if it hits, it hits, you know?
But I would imagine that experience of launching your own businesses in the circumstances and the fraught nature that you described, like that is training for combat. That is training for the insanity. And, you know, the one thing producers have to do most is think on their feet. It sounds like you've been there, you know, back there, you know, you've been there with the line cooks and you've been there at the front of the house and, you know, had all those experiences.
And you know, the funny thing is with a restaurant, you open up with a menu, right? And you go through these torturous process of getting a chef and a menu and you think it's great, the food and all that. And, you know, and then someone in the restaurant said, you know what, I really want to, God, can I have I just want a piece of, you know, you have this menu done, right? It's tested, it's prompted, what it means you test everything and you bring it in, you make 500 of them, you got the recipe done, then you order to that recipe so you have no shit left over in the box, you know, and your inventory is perfect. You don't have, you know, pork rinds when you don't, in the inventory, where you don't need pork rinds because it's money. So inventory is money.
Very books. Perishable money.
Every one of these books is $250, right? So it's like you don't need the books that you're not going to read. So get rid of half of them, right? So, you know, you do all this work, you get the menu, you think it's brilliant and unbelievable, right? And then someone comes in, a very valued customer, someone that is someone that you, who has a restaurant or someone that is in sort of a business that he goes out a lot and he orders like, you know, he's on a diet or something, whatever. And he orders, can I just have a grilled piece of chicken with some some French fries. I want a chicken free. And it's not. And so as a chef, I make it. I'm like, sure, I'll do it. No problem. So you make it. And then that guy sees you eat it. And then guy, can I have that? Can I have this? And then that becomes the best seller. You got to put it on your menu. You had no intention of it. And this thing you thought was going to go gangbusters sells, you know. So there's no telling how the restaurant works. And you need to react to the customer. So if the customer starts using your restaurant as more of a bar and grill versus fine dining, it's a bar and grill now. You're not going to force someone fine dining. You didn't see it. It didn't see it coming. The time was such they really felt more comfortable as this. And they used it. The ordering started to get different. They sort of hit these seven out of 20 items with them big sellers. They had nothing to do with your fancy pants, right? So what you do, you got to listen to that and get off your high horse. It's very, that's what you do in the restaurant world, right?
So you kind of, your customer is always right.
Well, no, they're always going to use the restaurant the way they want to use it. So you have to be available to change. There's two different things. That's a great point you brought up. The customer's always right. The customer, when sort of putting forth an opinion or putting forth a critique of something, I'm talking about asking for something they want to eat. I'm not talking about, that's that thing. That's that. That's right. The make it and give it to them. I'm talking about the critique or the this or this is not right or da, 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 I want it like this and blah, blah, blah. The customer is usually, you have to treat them like they're always right, but they're usually misinformed, right? I want my soup hot. I want it boiling hot. You can't eat boiling hot soup. You know, that's not a critique. That's just, that just doesn't make sense because your palate, your tongue will scorch. Okay, even at 120 degrees, which is very warm, it's fine.
Right.
So stuff like that, you have to be really intuitive, and that's what you have to do in producing. So we're trying to figure out what the customer is intuitively going to be drawn to that's relevant, it's fun, and it's watchable on the first 5 minutes, because that's the key. You got to grab them. Mm-hmm. And then they're there in the last 5 minutes when there's the finale or the reveal, they call it. You know, advertisers look at the first 10 and the last 10. They don't give a shit about the rest of it. They don't really. Mm-hmm. They know that once you hear it here, you're probably going to watch the whole thing.
Right.
That's
what's the measure of engagement.
That's kind of the fascinating part that I've learned is that you really have to have that. So you have to have a wow and a reveal, but you have to have the wow and the reveal be authentic. Right. So when a customer comes in, if you feel them complaining and they're authentic, you take it seriously because you know that 5 or 10 or 15 or 20% more people are saying the same thing, and you can lose customers out of like not listening to that one critique that you heard it and it was authentic and you checked it out and they were right. Most customers don't just complain to complain. Most customers have a legitimate misinformation, a complaint, or something is actually wrong. There's those three things. So you have to learn about all of those. Mm-hmm. And the best way to get customers that are pissed off back is call them up or email them, say, come on back. We made a mistake. We're so sorry. Da, 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 da. Right away. If you let it sit, they're never coming back. Once they come back, they're your best customer. Now they go, they know the chef. He's the owner. That's the maitre. He's a good friend. I'm like, come on. And they spend money and they're happy, like they're your best customers. So there's a big difference in the two, but not really. I mean, I'm still trying to keep that customer happy by balancing the relevance, their experience, the lighting, the music.
Right, and keep them coming back.
It's all entertainment, baby. It's like Hollywood. It's a movie. There's three breakfast, lunch, and dinner, three curtains, three shows a day. There's no difference. So that's why it's such an easy sort of jump.
We need to take a quick break, but we'll be back with Jeffrey Zakarian discussing the details of the new documentary he's working on for Tribeca. And we're back with Jeffrey Zakarian.
What was it that made TV happen for you? Was it something that you aspired to as you got successful?
I guess I was in 2007. 2008, I was in a restaurant, you know, had great reviews and I was working in restaurants. Food Network was going gangbusters. It was about, I mean, now it's almost 30 years old. So it was about 10, so it's like, it was about 18 years old, 17 years old, and Flay and, you know, Emeril Lagasse, and you know, there was some Tyler Florence, there was some key players in that. It really hadn't gotten nuts yet, but it was on the verge.
Sure.
Iron Chef had started. And in 2009, I approached someone and said, you know, we'd like a judge on, we're casting for the show called Chopped. And I'm sort of like, on the show, I'm very serious, but I'm not a serious character at all. I'm like, I have fun. And the kitchen is really who I am. The Chopped is like, you know, show them, you know, it's a serious show and we have to be serious. But I said Chopped. And I'm like, I heard the word. It's sort of like, it was like a little juvenile at first. I'm like, okay, what's the premise? I'm like, well, four people will get a basket of four ingredients. They got to make an appetizer in 20 minutes. And whoever loses gets chopped, and then it's three and two and one, and whoever wins get $10,000. The winner. I'm like, okay. I thought it was corny and cornball. I really didn't like it. And then they said, and the host, and there's a dog. In the original pilot they did, there was a dog.
Really? They,
not kidding. They fed the losing dish to the dog.
Wow. I wonder why that never took off.
Never made it. Didn't even get to the sizzle reel. So out of it comes Jeff.
I would imagine the chefs on the set were like, what the heck?
So I think I did the pilot with Alex Fornicelli, Rocco DiSpirito, and myself. I think those were the three. My brain is going to probably, it's one of the, I know it was Alex and Rocco, or me and Rocco and Alex. I know Alex was there. It might have been Scott Conan too. I'm not quite sure. We filmed a call over a few days. And I was paid nothing. It was like, you know, if you want to be on the show, it's like $250, but that's if they pick it up. So I initially said no. And then I went on the show, and I was the guy that was very chefy, because I was one of the most experienced chefs on the show, and I was the serious one. So I had the glasses, and I was the one that everyone thought was mean. And so, I mean, it worked. So I just kept being like mean and tough, and, you know, I don't care about your story. The food sucks. You're out. I wasn't Gordon Ramsay, but I was a more genteel version of him. So that was 2009, and you know that we've just done. We've done on 700 episodes we filmed, and I just got booked for two more. And you know, there's 12 judges. All the original judges are still there. So it's been like a juggernaut, and you know, it's one of the highest rated shows on TV. And I think just the ad revenue alone in the last 10 years has been extraordinary for Discovery, and that which was Scripps, which was now Discovery.
Yeah.
That's basically the intro to that. And then from that show, 2 years later, I was asked to do Iron Chef.
Did you find the work of being on TV, being on camera, speaking extemporaneously, did you find that easy? Was that a learning curve for you to be on TV?
It was a learning. I found it easy, but I got better at it because I learned how to forget about the camera. And when I saw some pictures of myself just doing like, you know, not even when I didn't think the camera was rolling, I didn't know it was rolling. It was actually, I was like, well, that's very natural. Let's do more of that. And so I started to just like become myself and not worry about like anything other than authenticity, because people really see it now. And I think that they understand the authenticity. That's why they like it, because I speak to like their mistakes. I speak to like my shortcomings. I speak to like, I'm really lazy. I don't want to do all this prepping. It's not worth it. I'd rather play golf. You know what I mean? So I talk to people like they want to hear, because most normal people are going to have to spend 3 hours a day prepping a meal.
Right.
Okay. Unless you're in Italy and you have nothing else to do. Right. And you have all this produce and you can take time and do it. So I think for busy Americans and for busy people, I was authentic, but I learned that. I mean, it sounds weird. I learned to be authentic. I learned to relax and be authentic at the same time. But it took time. I was very natural speaking because I have a lot of information that I want to get out. That's easy for me. But the being authentic and then being authentic under pressure and then be authentic under pressure on a show live where people are interrupting you is the hardest part of everything. You know, you really need a sense of humor, because you'll get in your own head and you'll short circuit, you'll forget, you know, that's just what happens.
What's it been like being at Food Network in the last couple of years after the Discovery deal went down, enlarged, you know, kind of just enlarged the scope of the bigger company? And they've been doing a lot with streaming of Food Network content specifically, and now they have Discovery Plus, of which Food Network and cooking is a huge, huge cornerstones of. How have you, you know, got any sense of what that could mean long term for Food Network, for your brand?
I mean, I know David Zaslav has a vision. He's a real, is one of the smartest people I've ever met. And he and Kathleen Finch and Courtney White, I mean, Courtney and Kathleen have been there for years. I have a great relationship with them. And then when he came in and he's pushing Discovery Plus and the streaming, it all coalesced around this timing. And it's been just an incredible ride, I'm sure, for the stock and for the company. But I think that what he brings to us is this horizontal integration of HDTV and all the shows. So like, you know, you have, you know, you can build a home and then the home comes in the friend. Here's the home. Let's stock it. Right?
Right.
Let's open the pantry in the home and the home goes over here. And like, we're going to demolish the home, another HDTV show. And then, you know, there's another home that comes through here. Well, we're going to like throw a party in this home and this home. So we have all these people around us that are basically fomenting lives around the household and you know, land ownership and homesteading, you know. And so we're in the homesteading business, and David realizes that. So he's tying everything together. He's trying to cross-pollinate HDTV, and well, there's 24, 27 channels just in that genre. There's so many. So we can have some Discovery personalities now on the Food Network. Mm-hmm. You know, we have like guests from, you know, Vanilla Ice. And the Vanilla Ice Project comes on because he loves to cook. He's come making wings on the kitchen. But this integration is fantastic. Right?
There's clearly a Deadliest Catch Food Network crossover just waiting to happen.
It is. It's going to happen. You can just see it. And then we have Shark Week and all that. So that's what David's done. And, you know, he doesn't mess around. This guy goes at warp speed, you know, literally. So he makes big mistakes too. I don't know what they are, but I'm sure there are. We don't care about them. But this Discovery Plus is like, you know, you see it's everywhere. There's, you know, 75 to 65,000 episodes. I mean, just like unbelievable amount of programming mm-hmm. content. Mm-hmm. So it's the same thing. It's like, but we're on a rocket ship because of where we're placed in that whole Discovery world. And like I said before, the one thing we're lacking is we're always lacking new content. So it's like a voracious animal. It just keeps eating up the content.
Right.
You just gotta like keep beating the thing, and it never gets fat. Just always, come on, more and more and more. It's like a marathon runner, right?
So it is voracious.
I need more. Then there's 5 people, then there's 20 people, then there's 100 people that need more. And so we're at the 100 to 1,000 people that need more stuff all the time. And it's so hard to get one thing off the ground. One thing takes probably, unless it's a remake of something that worked before, you just plug and play and you're like, oh, I'm going to try it again because it's 12 years ago, it worked and we shelved it. Let's put some new bells and whistles on it. Let's try that. We do that once in a while. But the real good things take time. There's a meeting. Then there's another meeting. Okay, what do you think? And show us a sizzle. And there's a green light. And then there's a production. And that's like 2 years. You know, and so it's like writing a book.
Need a lot of balls in the air to keep that, to feed that.
A lot of balls in the air. And so we have reduced the time because they need to reduce the time. So, you know, before it's like, yeah, 2 years is fine. Now it's like, in 2 months, if you don't have a sizzle, it's like, let's go. So we love that because that's like, sometimes you think too much, you know? Like I said, the person with the chicken fries, just put a chicken fry on a menu and they're going to sell.
I do know that obviously in the wider world and particularly in the culinary world, there's been a lot of pain in this pandemic, a lot of shutdowns, a lot of painful job losses. I know you've done great work with your telethons on the hunger issue. What is it? Does America need a Marshall Plan? Is there something that that you can think of can help the sector that is so beloved and so important to the fabric of communities? Any thoughts?
You know, that's great. I'm glad you led off with that. We're on both sides of the coin. I'm chairman of the Food Council for City Harvest, and I'm on the board. And for the last
a wonderful organization.
That's great. Almost 10 years I've been doing that. And, you know, when you can do a telethon and raise $2 million and feed people that day or the day after, that's job one. I mean, there's people hungry, they'd be fed right away. So City Harvest has done 100 million pounds this year, which is like double what they normally do in the whole year, last year. So it was like incredible what they did. And so all we had to do is try to feed the beast and get more money to them so they can do it, because it's expensive to hire trucks and refrigeration. Mm-hmm. But, you know, in the midst of all that, they had to move their location, because who knew the pandemic was going to hit? It was supposed to move in August, you know, like, oh my God. And all that fell through. So it's been a real mess. But that was job one. Just get some food to people. Good food. 50% vegetables. That's our mantra. No crap. We actually reject a lot of stuff.
Right. We've talked about that. You know, yeah.
You can have the sugar laden cereals. We don't need those. So that's great that we have to do that. The other side of it is, we're producing this documentary with Rebecca, which we're doing so that we really tell the story of why this restaurant industry is so vital. And I tell it from a New York standpoint. We hired Matthew Miele to do it, who did, Crazy About Tiffany's and Always at the Carlisle. It was two great documentaries. Katie Couric is involved and all that. So it's been really this, it's a love letter. It's a love letter to New York, with a real sharp needle to poke people into seeing, look what's happened. This can't go on. Something has to be done, because they shut the switch off on us. We didn't have a flood, you know.
Right.
9/11 was one monstrous day and maybe a monstrous month, but then everything went like this because you had finality. Mm-hmm. And finality, coupled with money and the grit of the Americans, people in New York City just went like this. This pandemic shutting off was worse than anything I've seen in 40 years combined. No finality. You're on, you're off, you're on. You're closed, you're open. You're inside, you're outside. You can't, it's just a disaster. So we're trying to document this and show how beautiful restaurants are, what they've fulfilled to people. And just, you don't feed people, feed their soul. This is like what people take all their angst out. That's where they put all their passion. That's where they spill the beans. That's where they fall in love and sign contracts and do all this stuff, mm-hmm. in conjunction to us feeding them. What's more intimate than giving people food that they put in their mouth?
Right.
No, any other profession that's that intimate. Maybe some forms of acting, but this is sustenance on the very basic. And the jobs is 400,000 jobs in New York alone. Mm-hmm. Restaurant is the largest employer.
It's devastating.
So we're writing a documentary. It's happening right now. People are on the booths with cameras. We started about 12 weeks ago. And again, quick turnaround, couple of meetings, boom, let's get cameras. We got some seed capital, go out in the streets. Who are we talking to? We called chefs. Of course, they all said yes. And you get these incredible vignettes. I saw it, I was touched. And that's just like the little bits and pieces I saw of it. But, it just captures such a critical moment. So we are capturing as it actually happens. Mm-hmm. And we so hope to be on the other side when it comes out. And I think we're going to, and I think that's what we're really looking to do.
Thanks for listening. Be sure to leave us a review at Apple Podcasts. We love to hear from listeners. And please tune in next week for another episode of Strictly Business.